coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation. It's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to the Hagman Report, folks. It is the Hagman Report for today. It's Tuesday, July 5th, 2022. Eric the Tech and I were just having some fun right before the opening here. So that's why the delayed response. Oh, I could tell you some stories. And he's going to have a tell-all book when I die, which I guarantee is going to be a bestseller because, oh, you don't want to know. Okay. Happy Independence Day to everyone. And you know, it means a lot to me. I just want to toss this up on the screen. You know, here we sit in the comforts of our home, maybe in our car, depending on where you're watching or hopefully listening to this or watching this. And we really haven't sacrificed anything for the lifestyles that we currently enjoy. Now, I realize, of course, we work, and yes, this is the fruit of our labor. But what about the founders? There's an image that I want to remind people. I think it's the first image attachment, Eric the Tech, image number one, about the founders. What happened to the founders? What was their ultimate, the signers of the Declaration of Independence, what happened? And there on your screen is this. By signing the Declaration of Independence, the 56 Americans pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. This was no idle pledge. 9 signers died of wounds during the Revolutionary War. 5 were captured or imprisoned. Wives and children were killed, jailed, mistreated, or left penniless. 12 signers' houses were burned to the ground. 17 lost everything they owned. And you know what? No signer defected. Their honor, like their nation, remained intact. So as we close out the festivities for Independence Day 2022, I wanted that to be shown, and there it is. And think about that. Now, what has been given to us, what have we done with? It seems as if we've squandered a lot of the rights bestowed upon us by God, delineated by the Constitution, and we are slowly but willingly giving up many of those rights and freedoms. We can't have this. And of course, over the Independence Day holiday, there was the apparently necessary and obligatory mass shooting in Highland Park, Illinois, in the suburb north of Chicago. And, that, of course, is getting a lot of play. Now, I'm going to be having tomorrow, I'm going to, Randy Taylor and I, because of Randy's investigative abilities and working together, we found a lot immediately following this shooting online. Specifically, Randy Taylor found a lot. Now, I'm going to tease this out right now. It's not what you think. This shooting, well, it is what you think. I went back very quickly. I went back to a number of different shootings. And one of them stuck in my mind. Of course, that had happened in Las Vegas October 1st, 2017. We never did get any answers on that. And that's something, you just kind of put that in the back of your mind right now. Let's move up to what happened on July 4th. Within seconds, in fact, even before the perpetrator's name, and I'm not even going to say his name, was released the social media, his presence on social media, his presence on the internet was being wiped out, erased, not even in the archive, not even ghosted in spots usually ghosted. Randy Taylor, of course, being the investigator that he is, found many interesting things and many interesting connections to, yes, the FBI. Now, the reason I'm bringing this out, I'm going to do a special on this, as well as have Randy and myself for the first half tomorrow talking about this incident, because the information here is pretty explosive and it's exclusive. This is a true investigative case. I want to just show you a couple of things just to tease this out. And can we put some of the images up there? Okay, so on the left of your screen, if you're looking at this, this is a picture of the alleged shooter. And I say alleged because there's no conviction here. Now, the way this individual is pulling down on his face, there's a meaning to that, psychologically speaking. There are, how can I say this? If you see someone doing that involuntarily or during some sort of emotional exchange, that means something. So does the reverse of that. I'm not going to go any further than that. To the right, you see a drawing. I want you to note the numbers. And in that drawing, of course, for the radio listeners, you've got a drawing of a male person, ostensibly the alleged shooter, holding a black colored the AR-15 type of gun, or perhaps AK-47, who knows, but it's a gun. Do you have any more images? I don't know if you can scroll down or okay. This image was found as well. Again, to my knowledge, most of these, maybe none of these, have been shown. It's another drawing ostensibly by the alleged shooter. And there's radio listeners, a couple of police cars in the background, and then the foreground would be a shooter, or a perpetrator, ostensibly, laying on top of what appears to be a pool of blood. Let's put up another one real quick. Okay, this is a picture. It's a cartoonish drawing. It could very well be the self-portrait. Self-made portrait of the perpetrator. Notice the word awake. You're going to see that a lot. Now, no, that does not mean awake in terms of the social usage, current social usage of that term. Other words there as well. That image holds a lot of symbolism. And yes, I understand this rap initiative by this individual titled Awake. I understand that, but there's more to it than that. If it was just that, it would stay, things like this would stay on the internet. But there's more to it than that. I'm going to leave it there, move on. There are many more images, many more drawings, many more references. But the way I'm looking at this is, obviously, number one, the FBI, and this is our working theory, and I believe that this to be the case, the FBI not only knew this individual, but the FBI had active surveillance on this individual. Now think about that for a second. More than active surveillance, I would also suspect, and I'm going to tell you this, based on everything that we've been finding over the last 18 hours, I would suspect that the FBI had, if not direct, secondary or tertiary contact or communication, I should say, with this shooter. Now, that's a heck of an indictment. That's a heck of a statement to make. But, folks, this is a whole different environment that in which we live today. And I just want to say that there's something very, very, very wrong with all of this. And, of course, this comes when? This comes in the wake of the Supreme Court ruling on the, what I term, may issue and shall issue by the issuing authorities for concealed weapons permits. Now, things happen for a reason, obviously. I mean, things happen for a reason. Things are done for specific purposes. The case that I'm referring to is the Supreme Court decision specifically affecting New York State, where a applicant for a concealed weapons permit does not have to anymore give a reason for desiring, needing, wanting, whatever, that permit, okay? Now, here's a problem for New York State, specifically New York City, but that, consider that a different entity than the state of New York. The governor of New York, Kathy Hochul. Now, this is not new news, except when you look at things like this or things like the Highland Park shoot, look at that as a stream of events. And I think you're going to see certain things. And especially if you go back, to 2017, 2017 was a little bit of an outlier in that Las Vegas shooting because there was more going on there than what's going on today with this. But, and that I'm going to be getting into that too. We are as well from an investigative viewpoint because, you know, it seems to me that the media has dropped the ball. The media never had the ball to begin with, I guess. But inquiring minds have dropped the ball on really determining what happened in Vegas on October 1st, 2017. But new gun laws include, now listen to this, people applying for a gun license will have to turn over a list of their social media accounts for officials to verify their character and conduct. You want a good reason not to be on social media? This was published, I don't know when it was, a couple of days ago, 3 days ago, at Conservative Treehouse. And I want you to read that, or at least refer to it. And folks, you can do so. The link will be in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. You have to open up the, open up the program description, the program itself, and program description only at HagmanReport.com. While we are on Brighteon and Rumble, the links are always contained at HagmanReport.com under the specific program or episode. But I want you to, I really would like you to consider a couple of things here. Now, I want to get into this here a little bit more because this is part of the larger agenda of the left, of these, really, these demonic individuals whose intent it is to disarm us. Please understand this. They will not rest until they can disarm us. They must disarm us. So New York Governor Kathy Hochul called a special session of the state legislature after SCOTUS knocked down the firearm restrictions, their firearm restrictions. The new law, which passed both chambers of the left-controlled government, takes effect September 1st, but it's not likely to hold up once challenged in court. But again, understand, the process is the punishment. It doesn't really matter. The new law is stunningly over the top and absolutely over the top. So, writes Sundance, again, I'm quoting him, keep in mind when writing the majority decision, Justice Clarence Thomas concluded there was no historical requirement that law-abiding citizens show the special or the kind of special need for self-defense required by New York law to carry a gun in public. Indeed, as Thomas wrote, there is no other constitutional right that an individual may exercise or only after demonstrating to government officers some special need. Now, I take some exception to what he said because this is not a constitutional right, but a freedom that is permitted, a freedom that from government intrusion. It's a freedom of American citizens that is limited by the Constitution. So, in effect, I know it's a word game here, but it's not a constitutional right. It's a right as a human being, as an American citizen, but it's not a constitutional right. The Constitution is to keep the hands off of that freedom of American citizens. But writes Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York, it's outrageous that at a moment of national reckoning on gun violence, SCOTUS has recklessly struck down a New York law that limits those who can carry concealed weapons. Now, this of course, is all choreographed. It's all choreographed, folks. But the end result here, at the very end of the day, they're going to take away not just our guns, not just our right to carry guns, but to own them. And it's going to go through the process of a registration, then a confiscation. But even before that, lack of ammunition, lack of availability of guns, and of course, the various restrictions state by state, especially the blue states, on type of ammunition, the magazine capacity, and so on. That's how they're going to do it. All right, keep your eyes on that. Now, again, they have to do it in order to accomplish what they're going to do next. Now, I want you to take a look at this. This is video 2, Eric the Tech, because part and parcel to the big plan, we're going to be eating bugs. That's what they feel. That's what they want us to do, is eat bugs in place of beef protein. You eat bugs. We'll eat the beef. You notice how they're killing off livestock, right? Chickens included. It's part of the plan. But it's not just here in the United States. It's worldwide. Now, this is not new again, but I want you to take a look at this. The farmers, the Dutch farmers, they're not taking any crud from any government officials. There are farmers right now in the Netherlands protesting against Dutch government's plan to cut nitrogen emission. Watch this video news report of what's taking place over there, because this is how I believe this is how we have to handle this. But this is really, really critically important, because what we see happening over in the EU, in that general vicinity, the what I'd like to call Klaus Schwab territory, it's going to be coming here. Will our response be the same? Take a look at this.
Thousands of Dutch farmers are rallying against the government on their tractors. Traffic in central Netherlands and around Amsterdam coming to a standstill. Our next report telling you more.
This is Schroei, a village in the Dutch province of Gelderland in central Netherlands. thousands of farmers have assembled, protested against the government's far-reaching plans to cut nitrogen emissions. This is one of the largest ever demonstrations by the farmers. They're driving in with their tractors, blowing horns, and causing widespread traffic chaos. The Dutch farmers are demanding the scrapping of recently announced plans by the Hague-based government. They believe it could see a 30% reduction in livestock.
I'm here for my future. I see my future falling apart. Not in 10 years, but sooner. And if you get up at a quarter past 4, 7 days a week for your cows, I think they didn't quite get in the heat. We are not just driving around a tractor.
Netherlands is the world's second largest agricultural exporter, but it is also one of the top greenhouse gas emitters in Europe, especially of nitrogen. And much of this is blamed on cattle-produced manure and fertilizers. But farmers say they are being unfairly targeted as opposed to big businesses and industries. Many are vowing to resist any plans to scale down or close farms.
Well, the Netherlands now has a whole policy, and the nitrogen standards that have to be met are incredibly high compared to other countries. The agricultural sector are the only ones that have to surrender everything. The industry is left out. The Randstad must grow, housing must grow, and agriculture must give way. Our survival is now at stake, so we must make our voices heard today.
The Dutch government plans to cut greenhouse gas nitrogen by as much as 70% by 2030 in 131 key areas. Many of them are close to nature reserves. This means a 40% drop in emissions is expected from farmers. And this could result in around 30% less cattle. The government's announcement comes in the wake of a 2019 ruling by the country's highest administrative court. It accused the Netherlands of not doing enough to protect its natural areas.
It was one statement on October 1st, 2019. And now there's just a policy on the table that they want to push through, and we must not let that happen.
And with this, traffic has come to a standstill for kilometers around the town of Strooi, which falls on the east of Amsterdam. The farmers and their tractors continue to arrive from across the country to protest. Bureau report, VION, World is One.
On to one of the biggest environmental problems in the 21st century, microplastics in the world's oceans. The billions of tiny plastic particles dispersed into our oceanic environments, these are recreated from the plastic waste thrown into the seas every day, like water bottles, plastic straws, car tires and synthetic items. They break down into tiny fragments, making their way into drinking water, produce food and bloodstreams, harming the environment, animals and human beings. But scientists claim to have found a way to tackle this crisis. That's robot fish programmed to remove microplastics from the seas and oceans. How exactly does this work? By swimming around and absorbing them on its soft, flexible, self-heating body. The first revealed experimental video looks like this. Just about 13 millimeters long, self-propelled robofish that can swim around, latch on to free-floating microplastics.
Okay, so here's the idea behind this, all right? And here's why this is important. And I saw this when I was in Washington, D.C. last week. When I was in D.C., there's some construction taking place in the suburbs, and specifically in Alexandria, where Amazon warehouses were being built. One of the signs out there, net zero carbon by 2040. Okay, now I know what that says. I know what that means, but when you look at this with respect to the farmers and the entire agenda, I don't want you to think I'm skipping around here. When you look at the entire agenda behind this, they don't want us to live. They don't. I mean, ultimately, bottom line, they don't want us to live, but certainly not to eat, not to travel, using gasoline-powered engines. They don't want us to farm using diesel or gasoline-powered tractors. It's all part of the larger agenda. That's extremely important. More on that. Well, okay, there's an image I took when I was in Virginia, Alexandria, Virginia, there. And if you take a look at that, this is an Amazon warehouse that's being, well, it's a used to be a bank building, multi-story bank building that's being converted into an Amazon warehouse. And if you take a look at that, net zero carbon by 2040 in the center of your screen, it really tells you all you need to know. This is all part of the larger WEF, CFR, Trilateral Commission, all of their plans. Okay, very quickly, moving along, Eric the Tech, this will be page 2, as well as page 2 under the program description notes. Speaking of wanting to kill us, the left has gone and the global overlords have gone a little bit crazier, a little bit harder. Because now they're pushing for, and successfully pushed for, the injecticide jabs for infants and small children. Take a look at this. This is page 2. Here it is. 2- and 3-year-old kids with seizures is the new normal. Now, this is a Substack article by Steve Kirsch. And it's important for a lot of reasons, because people are now starting to realize, wait a second, and nurses as well, doctors as well, that we're getting multiple reports about children 2 and 3 years old having seizures. It's only happening on children who received the shots, and symptoms start 2 to 5 days after the shots are given. Now, this is happening more and more and more. Now, I want people to understand exactly what they're doing to our children. You know this, folks. But now people are starting to pay attention. The only common factor with the children having these seizures is the fact that they were given this shot 2 to 5 days before the seizure. Writes Kirsch, the doctors cannot figure out what's causing the seizures, since it couldn't be the vaccine, since those are safe and effective, we are told. The medical staff is not permitted to talk about the cases. Of course not. I'm working on bringing a couple of physicians here to talk about this and other things in studio, perhaps. All right. And second to last is video number 1. Speaking of this, you know, it is beyond contempt, beyond contemptible, for pharmaceutical companies to engage in direct marketing of pharmaceutical products to children. I want you to take a look at this. This is a public service announcement. This is a week and a half, 2 weeks old, 10 days old. This is by the CDC. And this is directed at your children or your grandchildren. Watch this.
Now Daddy has super-duper bandages just like Elmo.
You were super-duper today, getting your COVID vaccine, Elmo.
Yeah, there was a little pinch, but it was okay. Elmo was really glad to have Daddy and Baby David there with him. Baby David, where are you?
I had a lot of questions about Elmo getting the COVID vaccine. Was it safe? Was it the right decision? I talked to our pediatrician so I could make the right choice. I learned that Elmo getting vaccinated is the best way to keep himself, our friends, neighbors, and everyone else healthy and enjoying the things they love.
Oh, Daddy! Oh, Elmo and Baby David have a question. Oh. Can we have a hug?
Oh, come here, son.
Elmo loves you, Daddy.
I love you, too.
It's okay to have questions about COVID vaccines for your kids. Get the latest facts by speaking to your pediatrician or healthcare provider.
All right. Direct marketing to your children. When is this okay? When is this okay? But remember, we have to follow the science, right? We have to believe in science. Well, what is being told to us is certainly not that. In other words, we are not being told the true science behind things. And if you want to even take this to the extreme, take a look at this image. Of course, believe in the science, except, of course, when it comes to chromosomes, right? Because that is subjective. We believe in science, states Dick Levine. Just not the chromosome thing. We don't agree with that one. Now, here is a guy dressed up as a woman and pretending to be an admiral in charge of health and human services decisions, in part. Let's not forget about this. This is image three. Trust your doctor, because more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. That's an actual magazine ad. I'm going to just leave that right there. Speaking of direct marketing, that's to adults or children or whoever. But just remember, next time you go in to talk to your doctor about the injecticide shot, just remind them of that. In fact, you can take an image of that. Because, in fact, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. All right. The last thing I'm going to end with this segment, you've got to see this because this is where we're at. Have your children leave the room. Even though this is from a Rhode Island state senator, Tiara Mack. Remember gravitas, right? That word that was made famous by, who was that? Bill Clinton? Gravitas. I want to show you anti-gravitas, kind of like matter, antimatter. This is anti-gravitas, but this is an actual campaign ad. Well, it's a social media ad to advance her from her state senator position, but she's a sitting state senator right now. This is Tiara Mack from Rhode Island. You elected this, Rhode Island. Okay, children out of the room. You sure? How about adults that don't want their brains fried? Go ahead and get out of the room. Hey, we have an empty studio. Watch this.
Vote Senator Mack.
Okay, that's enough. Once is enough. Eric, the tech reminded me that people are listening to this as opposed to watching this. And he said, explain what people saw. Explain to the radio listeners what people saw. Eric, the tech, why don't you do that? Why don't you explain to them what they saw?
Upside down twerking in a bathing suit.
We'll go with that. We'll go with that. I got nothing. I got nothing. I really don't. All right. Before we get to Stan Deo from standeo.com, I just want to point something out. I'm going to toss two numbers out at you because these are real numbers. $316 a month. $297 a month. What would you do with an extra three? I'll just round it up. What would you do with an extra $300 a month? One is actually ordering or prepping, okay, using that extra money to prep, buying supplies. The other is actually paying down debt. And you might say, well, boy, how can I get in on an extra couple hundred bucks a month? It depends on your situation. But have you ever looked at your credit card statement and been shocked by the interest rate? Did you know you could actually roll all of your credit card debt into one monthly payment at a lower fixed rate? You can. And that increases your discretionary spending when you're not blowing it on interest rates. You can lower your interest rate and save with a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream. Rates start at 5.73% APR with autopay and excellent credit. That's lightstream.com/Hagman. That's lightstream.com/Hagman. So just for my listeners, apply today, apply now to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Hagman. I'm going to spell it out for you. It is LIGHTSTREAM.com/Hagman, two N's on Hagman. That's HAGMANN. And this is subject to credit approval. Rates range from 5.73% APR to 19.99% APR and include a 0.50% autopay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. And as I always say, you'll thank me later. You're going to be glad you did this. It's something you can do and use the extra income for things like prep or debt reduction on other debts and such. It's really a great program. All right. With me is Stan Dale from standale.com. If you haven't done so already, considering the sun, considering all kinds of things, make sure you go to empshield.com. Use promo code Hagman. Get one of these. Get one of these for your house, for your car, your boat, your generator, your warehouse, your whatever it might be. Telling you, stuff works. Or this works. EMPShield.com. EMPShield.com. Promo code Hagman. It will protect your equipment from things like Carrington events, you know, when the sun acts up and does things and fries things. And it'll also prevent, mitigate the, how can I put this? Minimize the potential for fires in your house and such. And maybe that's not the correct way to say it, but it's a very good and very inexpensive insurance policy for your home. That's empshield.com. Also, when you go to standale.com, make sure you support him via Patreon. He's got some terrific meetings, Patreon meetings taking place, extremely terrific stuff going on. So, as well as all of his investigative work products. With that, Stan Dale from standale.com. Stan, I hope you and your family had a very good Independence Day holiday.
We did. A bit laid back in the evening. We put our lawn chairs out to the front and watched the probably 20, 21 different fireworks displays going on all the time around us. Three main ones, and then the others were in various households, and then a house very close to us, which was producing some rather interesting and loud, displays. So we sat there, and it was a nice, cool evening. Not cold, but just it wasn't 100 degrees. It was cool, but nice. And our little doggie, Miss Bella, she sat down next to us and didn't seem to be fazed at all by all the fireworks. Last year she was, and years before that she was, but this year, I guess she couldn't be bothered about being excited about it and just lay down next to us and watch the fireworks. And there were some really neat new types of things. And other than that, during the day, we had, hot dogs and beans and things like that. So,
how great is that? Celebrating Independence Day. Yeah, I'm so glad that we gained our independence from Mexico or Germany or wherever that might have been. Yeah, most people don't know. Right. Most people, you ask people, where did America, you ask college kids, where did we gain our independence from? And some have no clue. And as to the year or who or what, but it's sad. But the bottom line is God bless America. That's the bottom line. So,
yeah, you don't see people trying to escape America. You see everybody else in the world trying to get to America. So that tells you that they think it's the great thing to be.
Yeah, that's exactly. Well, I didn't mean to cut into your time earlier. I had to show that Rhode Island thing because my head hurts. I just don't understand gravitas. I don't understand what people are thinking anymore.
Well, it is difficult to describe what you saw to the audience. I mean, it's like, you know, very difficult to explain that. And once you've seen it, you can't get rid of it.
You can't unsee it. And that's the problem. Yeah,
it is. All right. Well, now, let's see here. You were talking EMP shields just before we went to my segment here. The sun is, as almost every week now, as I say, it's generating a lot of flares and activity that's rather concerning to me anyway. And so the likelihood of needing an EMP shield for a solar-caused EMP or coronal mass ejection, which can last for hours, rather than just do that, the EMP shield is for nuclear attacks, which we're suddenly looking down the muzzle of. I mean, China and Russia don't like us. Iran doesn't like us. And, you know, their populations want to come here, but the leadership wants to destroy America because it doesn't fit their global political model or something. But looking at the sun, there was one thing that happened here that is happening now that I don't understand exactly how this ties in with what I see happening with flares and solar wind ejections from the sun. But look at slide 47, Eric. A sudden increase in noctilucent clouds, that's nighttime bluish clouds that occur. Something unexpected just happened in the mesosphere. As June came to an end, NASA's AIM spacecraft detected a sharp increase in the frequency of noctilucent clouds, the most in 15 years. Now, if you click on the picture, yeah, you've done that. That's good. The thing shows that 2022 is the red on the graph there. It spiked up to, gosh, nearly 70, 75, somewhere in that region, as far as percent of frequency of these noctilucent clouds. And you can see all the gray down there below. It never got up, some cases, two or three cases, got to maybe 50. But this is an increase in the period 2007 to 21. It's an increase, huge increase. And I don't know why. It, you know, they give in the article, they give some discussion about it. But these noctilucent clouds, they must be tied to the coronal mass ejections or solar wind in some way. They must be tied together with that. Their article here, let's see here. They say that in spaceweather.com here, if you click on the text, Earth's noctilucent clouds are Earth's highest clouds seeded by meteoroids. They float at the edge of space for more than 80 kilometers above the ground, roughly 50, 60 miles. And they form when summertime wisps of water vapor rise up to the mesosphere, allowing water to crystallize around specks of meteor smoke. Well, okay, you know, how long does meteor smoke hang around? And why have we got more of it now, you know, all of a sudden? And, you know, the water going up, well, that might well be because of the drought we're having, you know, in numerous places on the planet. Water, you know, potable water just evaporating. Even glaciers and stuff like that are melting faster than normal. So to me, they're a pretty phenomenon, wonderful to look at, but they are a symptom of something changing in the sun and Earth kind of relationship in our atmosphere and magnetic field. Anyway, I bring it up because it was a thing that they noticed in space weather, that it was a sudden increase, and it was.
Interesting.
Now, yeah, it is. Look down at slide 42. There's the picture. If you click on the picture, you can see some beautiful views of these colors formed by these cloud, by the meteoroids and the light they produce like that. It's on the same page. It's caused, in this case, that picture, by a geomagnetic storm. We had a near miss by a CME about 4 days ago, the 1st of July. And I want you to look down at a picture here of the magnetic fields of the sun, slide 44. Now, I've harped on this for a number of weeks on your show. I look at these magnetic field lines. They show connecting north and south poles on the sun, you know, around these active solar regions. And if you're looking there at that picture, what I'm concerned with is on this particular side of the sun, the other side is not the same amount of it. But on this side, we see lines coming from that dark area at the north part of the sun across the equator of the sun and down to an active region. And also we see an active region above in the northern hemisphere coming to the same active region below the equator. Now, you know, magnets, they attract each other, you know, north, south, they attract and they try to move together. And looking on this side of the sun, it's lopsided. This side of the sun, those areas are trying to pull together toward the equator. And the other side is not doing as much. There's a lot of active regions down in the southern hemisphere as well. There's just a lot going on that kind of sends off alarm bells to me to watch the sun for, you know, coming activity. I'd say within the next week, we're going to see some pretty impressive active regions coming around. You can see the beginning of it at the lower left there, where those bright areas are. But this is, a trans-equatorial magnetic field trying to pull the surface of the sun toward the equator from both sides, squeeze. Now, that might produce something on the other side of the sun, which is like flares, coronal mass ejections, coronal holes. Now, what we're looking at in this particular picture here, that dark area, that hole, that coronal hole, have another look at it over in slide 43. If we click on slide 43 picture, we see that this area is producing a lot of solar wind directly at the Earth, which is affecting our weather and numerous other things. In the text on the article, it says a scary solar storm to hit Earth on July 6th after Cyclops-like sunspots blast solar winds toward the Earth. And you can read the article at your leisure, but basically it's saying that not only was this coming from the sun, it's coming from a whole area where the solar wind is, rather than a flare, a coronal mass ejection. This is sunspot producing problems with our magnetic field and our, our local weather here on the Earth.
Mm. Thank you. Wow.
Yeah. I mentioned the coming stuff in the next week. Click on slide 41, Eric. That's the heliographic, look at the sun. About two-thirds of the sun's surface we see at zero is what's facing the Earth, and back to minus 120 is what's coming, and from zero to about 80 is what's past. Now, we didn't get all the rest of it because one of the satellites stopped functioning years ago, but to what we do see here in this picture is these two bright areas on the left, above and below the equator, are heading toward us. This, based on about a 30-day average for a solar transit, for it to make a complete revolution, we're looking at probably 5 to 7 days until this whole area on the left is facing the Earth direct. All right.
So, okay. Well, we cannot, or can we, extrapolate anything from this picture as to what will happen in 5 to 7 days?
Well, it's a very active region, or two of them on the left there. And when I see those, it's a breeding ground for large flares and coronal mass ejections. So I'm expecting in the next 5 to 7 days for this these two spots to be Earth-directed, pointed at us. And historically, when you've seen these things, they produce nasty things coming toward the Earth. It's just getting worse and worse.
All right.
Let's see. Slide 46, I think, is on the same thing. Solar storm snowplows past Earth, and it could cause problems with the power grid. You were talking about EMP shields just before I came on. EMP shields are certainly essential for, nuclear war and for short, millionth of a second type EMP pulses. Great stuff. And in fact, some cases, small radios and portable generators, things like that, they may not be hurt without an EMP shield. I don't like to take the risk myself, but anyway, they may not. But yet when you get a solar-caused, a CME-caused impulse, that will last for hours. And That then produces the likelihood of fire in your circuit breaker box and your wiring your house. That's why, mainly in my opinion, you need to get that EMP shield now, because the sun is a clear and present danger. We're not wondering about the if of politics, whether somebody's going to nuke us or not. This is the worst kind of EMP to have is the solar one.
The EMP shield will afford that protection.
Yes.
I mean, not as long as the thing's not insanely strong. Like, when I say insanely strong, I mean, it doesn't last for days, and, you know, it's not pounding us with, hydrogen level bombs of,
No, it won't last for days, because the sun is still turning.
Yeah.
And the earth directed part of it will pass. It'll very quickly, within a day or less. But still, during that time, there will be interruptions of electricity supplies. They're expecting blackouts, during this solar cycle. It's a surprise to everyone, including the scientists that, produce these forecasts. At one point in time, I haven't checked it lately, it was over 205% greater than predicted by the solar scientists, early last year. So anyway, these solar ones with the heat we have and the dryness of the surrounding territory, crops and buildings and trees, I'm expecting more fires to across not only the United States but across the world to start, just because of the strangeness of the weather, from the sun putting heat energy into our weather machine, causing storms, lightning storms, violent storms where they don't normally occur. Now, I also heard in your section before me about CO2 production and all these greenies saying, we got to stop CO2. Well, volcanoes, produce 1,000 times what our emissions do from cows and cars and everything else of CO2. I just wanted to throw that in as an add on to what you were saying in the first part there, just to remind me of this.
Yeah, and by the way, I want to just want to remind you, you do have 38 minutes left. It's 8 past the, our program clock is screwed up, I screwed up the program clock, so you got 8 after the top. But
good.
Yeah, so, but yes, there's a lot being blamed on carbon emissions, and from cows to cars, okay, and no one's taking into account the sun, the solar activity and such as being a factor in the climate change. The climate is changing, but not for the reasons we're being told, and that's kind of the setup into that farmer protest. And I mean, talking about farmer protests, because they want to cut down nitrogen emissions, fertilizer, and of course, when I was in D.C. last week, I passed by a building being created by, it was going to be an Amazon warehouse, and it said zero net carbon emissions by 2040. I don't know how they accomplished that. I don't know. But if you got people, you're going to have carbon emissions. If you got plants, I don't know.
Let's look at the global picture as a globalist would. If you come out and tell the people of the planet, the cause of our problem is a change in the sun, and it's getting worse, and we can't fix the sun, you're going to be approaching anarchy very quickly across the planet, because the people say, well, if you can't fix it, we're going to die. I'm going to get what I need now and try to survive with my family in a cave or underground bunker or whatever. Now, this is because, they're frightened. And so the powers that be, the globalists, look at this problem. They say, well, let's blame it on things that they can fix or address to fix, like, cow gas and cars and any other things that are emitting greenhouse gases to hold the heat in. That way, people won't panic, but they will understand trying to stop this process, which will get more stringent as time passes. And so the globalists will say, okay, we need a world authority, which becomes a world government, to stop all these emissions and control the weather, control the environment, control our production of these bad gases. Now, it's leading into, as many other things that they do, into this one world power structure, this one world government, the need for it. people won't accept it if it becomes a dictatorial grab of power. Now, in the process of doing what they're doing, we're seeing, you know, COVID type, diseases coming out, viruses. We're seeing these things take out a percentage of our population, not a huge percentage yet, but it's coming. And so one of the ways the globalists realize that they must control the planet and the environment is to lose a large percentage of the population due to natural catastrophes, you see. And doing this, it will cause that, you know, setting up this global government and control. This has been planned for, you know, long, you know, for decades, perhaps a century or more. And we're now getting to the final part of it. So that's why I think that they downplay the real problem, which is the sun going through a natural course of its aging. And it's going to be throwing off a large cloud, just even as the Bible says in the Old Testament, it will emit a large cloud around it of debris that it will throw off and through the solar system. Some of it will hit Earth, and it'll be that side of Earth that's facing at that moment, which will probably cause fires and overheating instantly of about a third of the planet. But you don't tell the people this. You can leak the data to unofficial sources as well, like myself. I don't work for the government or anything else. And there are others of your guests, and you know they get information from the government on various things, or they see it in the press releases from USGS or NASA or whatever, and various other things in the economy. They see these things and report it to people who will listen to them. So the government is allowing those who think to at least prepare themselves of what's coming without panicking, for the most part. Anyway, that's the way I see this. That's what they're doing.
And it's you and people such as yourself who are educating the public, at least those who are willing to listen about really what the cause is and how they are fooling us, the lies that they are perpetuating in order to make us believe otherwise. And I appreciate that. And you've been writing about this, Cosmic Conspiracy. You've been writing and teaching about this for decades, and I appreciate that. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. It's, you know, as you say, I've been talking about it for a long time. But some people listen, some people prepare, some people take advantage of the data that we produce in books and on the daily news page that Holly does, or on our weekly show here with you. One of the things that's of critical importance, as far as I can see, is the sun's ultraviolet radiation production. Since 1992, we've had two major bands of ultraviolet suddenly appear from the sun, showing, of course, that the solar equation, solar chemistry, started changing at that point to where it was producing ultraviolet in areas or frequencies that we don't want to see in the UVC band. On slide 40, Eric, just to give you an idea, look at slide 40. This varies from day to day, but click on the picture and you'll see the forecast for ultraviolet radiation striking the surface of the United States here. All those 11 purples there, and the tens are very high, but 11 is greater than extreme. And you don't want to be out in the sun without some kind of heavy sunscreen and with eyeglasses that will block the UVC, ultraviolet rays. Just, you know, blue blockers and things like that. And you want things that wrap around, if you can, wrap around the side of your eyes, because the ultraviolet is causing damage to a lot of eyes. There's even 12s down on the tip of Florida there, if you're looking at that map. This is just hot and dangerous ultraviolet. People who are affected by it, we've seen from when it hit south of Cuba probably 5 years ago, when the Southern Atlantic anomaly, magnetic anomaly, expanded suddenly and the edge of it touched up in that area. Some of the islands, it caused nausea, skin rashes. They closed schools and children home because of the instant, you know, damage to them, to their skin, and some of them to their eyes. Anyway, that's ultraviolet map. And if you look at the government, you can see that, or look at the index I put up. But it's definitely a problem that we need to address.
I'm just curious, in just for 30 seconds, what would a map of that look like 50 years ago?
I don't know. I don't know. We had the technology to do that, but I would say that there probably wouldn't be any purples.
Okay.
I'd say the highest would be a red. But
okay. All right. I'm just curious.
Just at a guess. Just at
yeah.
a guess.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So the sun has definitely changed behaviors. Behavior.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It has.
All right.
And it is aging and more rapidly than, you know, the established scientific community would want you to believe. I mean, it's because they have a misconstrued idea of how old the universe is and how old the Earth and the sun are. They talk in billions of years, and you know, I talk in hundreds of thousands of years, if that much, for age of the universe and the planets and everything else. Because if you look out there, you know, with the telescopes, there are things that we're seeing happen now that occurred much more recently than, you know, 5 billion years ago at the Big Bang or whatever. It's another discussion I've had it many times about why it's their dating is wrong. But when you have this comfortable feeling about, oh, science says it'll be a billion years before the sun goes red giant or supernova or any of that kind of stuff, you fall asleep, you know, in this comfort zone. But it's not there, and it's something we can't control. And when people realize that, then they realize that it's out of human control, and that they need help, and they're going to seek help. Yeah, those that turn to God, and those that turn to people pretending to be God, you know, like the fallen ones.
Okay.
Disease, the sun, nuclear war, asteroid strike from near Earth, asteroids, that kind of stuff. These things all make the people of Earth want to find somebody, some group or whatever, to solve all these problems, you know, to deliver them from this threat. These threats, these are critical crisis curves. And that's just, people don't realize they're being led right into that gate to the New World Order. Somebody solve my problem. Somebody help me. And they aren't turning, for the most part, to the one being that could help them. And that's the being that created this whole universe and all the laws and rules of it. Anyway.
You know, the pandemic, the plandemic, scamdemic, whatever you want to call it. Is kind of like a microcosm of what you just described. And I think it almost is like a run up to the larger issue, this climate change. It's not a hoax, but it's not presented as it should be. So I think you're 100% accurate. And I think that we're seeing the various run ups to this grand finale stage play act that we're going to be seeing. So you're 100% right.
Yeah. You and I, and I'm sure a lot of the audience have seen crowd reactions when there's a fire in a building or a theater or something in somebody else's fire, they stumble and stamp over each other getting out the doors. They panic for the most part. There are some who are logical and walk out the side entrances and don't worry about it. But that's where we are in analogy is, you know, people will act like a herd, you know, of sheep being, you know, forced into a particular gateway.
Yep.
And they won't realize what it is. It leads to the slaughterhouse. Anyway.
Yep.
There are a few interesting things here today. Holly brought to my attention that there was a swarm of earthquakes that are in South Carolina over the last 6, 7, 8, 7 months. Okay. But I checked it back for 30 years looking at earthquake patterns. And I want you to look on the picture, Eric, and zoom in on the bottom part of it first with the little yellow and red circles and things. And this is a Google Earth map of the northeastern eastern states, okay, from Tennessee over to South Carolina. You can just click on that picture. Did I tell you what slide that was? That's slide 50.
Yeah, he's good now. So there it is.
Okay, good. Okay, click on the bottom picture to zoom it. You'll see that you can. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Now, USGS has put these earthquake propensity or colorings here to show that these are areas that are tending to have earthquakes. And the red area obviously being more prone to earthquakes than the orange or yellow. But in this case here, if you look at all the white dots just to the right of the word Tennessee, they're in a kind of a ridge area extending from the northeast down to the southwest. And that's the quakes that have occurred there. Some of them in South Carolina and some of them in Tennessee, et cetera, et cetera. Now, why is this swarm occurring? You know, the geologists are asking the same question. What is causing this? Now, if we slide up, Eric, to the top picture, remove those things so we can see the dirt better. Years ago on the show, I talked about there were large asteroids, there were large comets that hit the Earth during its early formation days. And where these yellow arrows are is an area that I pinpointed as a large snowball, a large, you know, comet, ice comet, hitting the Earth up near Delaware, Maine, that area. And you'll see where these yellow arrows are. They follow this impact path all the way down, all the way down to, you see a crescent shape at the bottom of that, which is a typical shape that you see when an asteroid hits, or a meteor hits the Earth and shoves the Earth, you know, ahead of it until it stops. You know, south of the tip of Argentina, there's a crater impact there that did this, and there's still earthquakes occurring along that crescent shape on it. That's the El Tanin asteroid that hit there. So this is the same kind of a pattern. And you can see that the arrows follow this. It not only did it they pushed stuff down there to form that crescent, but it broke through the crescent on the top part in Tennessee and curved up around in to form the New Madrid fault line all the way down to Louisiana, to the coast there. This was a thing that weakened the heck out of our crust. And we know that the area for the New Madrid there on the left side of it, that cooled and formed hexagonal crystal structures, you know, that did not break. They didn't fracture apart and separate that part of America from the West. So the impact, though, hit that hexagonal structure, and it formed, you know, back pressure on it all the way along. It traveled from, you know, from up near Delaware down, and it formed, well, from the northwest down to the southeast near South Carolina and Tennessee, it formed stretches in the surface. You can look at it yourself on Google Earth or Google Maps and zoom in, and you'll see where South Carolina is there. You'll see that there's a large river running just southwest of that yellow line of earthquakes I showed you. And that is the Savannah River, which was a crease formed by this impact a long, long time ago. So I'm just trying to once again draw people's attention to the fact that there was a period of time in the Earth's development where huge masses struck us as recently as the Great Flood, you know, that talked about Noah. That impact was on the east coast of India. It was the Kudapa impact, and it was huge. This one here, I think, was probably just as big, if not bigger. In fact, it was larger. And I suspect from what we see with the water in the Great Lakes that the comet, you know, had pieces of it all over there, but the main thrust of it was down where these yellow arrows are, and the water, you know, filled the Great Lakes and formed the rivers that that we see today, even though they're a little bit, you know, low from the drought. Anyway, I'm babbling on here, but I enjoy looking at these things to answer questions like, why is this happening? It's pressure on these fault zones that were formed a long time ago by an impact of a large comet on our east coast. Fun things to speculate on, but anyway.
Very interesting, though, when you look at, I like that, because you can almost do what you're doing is almost a recreation of how we got to where we are, and I like that, earth-wise, you know, terra firma-wise. Good, so thank you for that.
Remember, we did a show a couple of years ago, Doug, where I listed all, or showed all the places on the planet where these types of impacts had occurred.
Yeah.
You know, and some of them have been officially recognized. Some of them haven't yet. But it's a pattern recognition thing, you know. I mean, you can do it. Everyone can use their eyes to see a pattern of a long stroke, and then it ends in kind of a half mushroom shape or a crescent shape at the end where it piles up the earth ahead of it. And you can find these things all over the planet. I mean, I've looked at probably 7 really good ones, a lot of them in China and Asia. But anyway, when you get time, folks, look it up, you know, in your spare time and see these patterns. And you can then see why certain events occur around them. In the Eltanen asteroid impact south of Argentina, that one is a very prominent crescent. And that one has earthquakes almost weekly along the ridge of that crescent. It's so weakened the surface of the earth. So that one there just gives you an idea about what might be happening up in New Guinea in that area, or you know, north of Australia there, but in Indonesia. There was another large asteroid impact there. Anyway, now I want to get back to slide 57, Eric, about this problem over in Italy. 14 hikers, I think they've gone up to 24, are still missing out. What happened here is they were up on a ski thing there, and this glacier just totally collapsed and ran downhill at 185 miles an hour. The glacier was shoving rocks and ice toward these skiers and stuff. They were up on it.
Yippee-ki-yay, man, okay.
Well, it definitely was a disaster. I'm just going to read here. Rescuer Gino Cornelli, who spoke to the outlet after the 6 bodies had been recovered from the mountain, said those that were found were, quote, torn apart as a result of the tragedy. I mean, you had a 185-mile, you know, rock storm and ice storm. Yeah, your history. Now, I looked at that and I thought, well, okay, this is unusual. It got warm and it's collapsed that glacier. Where else is this happening? Well, in Tibet, in slide 49, if we look at that, melting Tibetan glaciers reveal 1,000 potentially dangerous microbes. Now you think, okay, well, that's interesting. What kind of dangerous microbes? Now, they've been frozen for a long time in the Tibetan mountains, at least back to the flood, maybe way back beyond that. I don't know. But anyway, these are what they call archaeomicrobes, archaeoviruses, and coming back from ancient times. And so they say, well, okay, they're there, but don't worry about it. They're not going to hurt you. We just thought we'd tell you, right? These things are happening. And so that brought to mind an event that I experienced myself, a couple of events actually, but down in Australia, there was a melt wave from Antarctica, you know, flowing up toward the southern portion of Australia. And the ice was melting. And this was early. This was back in 1996, before the sun even got really hot. But the melt wave, the ice melted and formed a slow wave that headed toward the south coast of Australia. And suddenly we see, you know, in the center part, you know, South Australia, that, you know, Adelaide area, that there were millions of pilchard fish dying on the shore. And the odd thing was that these dead fish were attracting no flies and no predators. They didn't want any part of it. Whatever killed them was so strong. So they started investigating. At the time, they reported as an archaeobacteria, not a virus, but an archaeobacteria from, you know, that had been frozen in the ice for thousands of years. Thawed, came down and killed the fish. So it was so toxic that even the predators and parasites didn't want it. And this thing started to move around the coast and around the west and east coast up to about halfway in Australia there over a period of weeks. Now, if you look at the report later, you know, in modern times about that incident, they say that what killed the fish was a herpes variant that the fish are, that particular kind of fish are very susceptible to. Now, whether it was, you know, all herpes virus and not bacteria, I don't know. But that was a byproduct of snowmelt, the threat, you know, and there were a lot of stinking fish on the coast for a while. Australia even put a submarine out to figure out what the heck was happening to them. Found the dead fish not only on the coast but on the seabed, all headed toward it, you know, Antarctica. That's where they started dying, and up to the coast where they were deposited.
Herpes, huh? Herpes. Is that what you said, herpes? That sounds an awful lot like the tractor story or the toilet seat story. Just saying.
Yeah. Well, anyway, these are things to consider. You know, we feel that we're comfortable in controlling, you know, various viruses and bacteria that we know about on the planet now. We've got drugs and treatments to mitigate the situation. But that's what we know about. And all these things that are hidden in the deep freeze that's now melting because of the sun getting hot are going to be released on us. And we don't have immunity to that naturally. So when the Bible talks about pestilence being hugely responsible for a large, large percentage of the planet dying, I can believe that something was released like this from an ice melt or some other source like that where they were trapped.
Right. Which I can too. Yeah. Wow. Kind of blows my tractor and toilet seat story out of the water. But all right, I'm kidding. But go ahead.
Yeah, you know, talking about Australia, a couple of the other things remind me of there. Slide 48. There were biblical swarms of giant cannibalistic crickets in the northwest United States. They're reporting on here. But we had a plague of these when I was down there, and I think it was in about 1974, three or four, in Melbourne and the surrounds there. We had so many of these large crickets as a plague that when you drove down the street, you were scrunching them under your wheels all the time, whether on a highway, whether in the city. They were hitting your windscreen and splattering, and gush was all over. Your blades were having to wipe muck off like that. And you had to watch your car keep it from sliding off the road in certain areas of the country, the countryside there, because, you know, their goo from being killed was a natural type lubricant. I've been in that one there, and I appreciate what's happening, over west here. But these things, they will eat anything. They're carnivorous to their own kind. If they can't find something to eat in the foliage, they will eat their own, insects. I mean, their own buddies along the way.
Typical leftist bugs. Okay, go ahead.
Well, Australia had some interesting precursors for what's going to hit the planet, I think, in modern times. But when I was on the farm north of near Killarney in the West Australia, we had a plague of mice. Now, they've had one recently, the last couple of years, in the Queensland area, but over on that side, we were working the wheat fields, and we had sheep. And I was working for the Nixon brothers there on their farm. And I would come out in the morning from the bunkhouse, and there would be like grasshoppers, but it would be mice jumping up in the field like this. And they were just everywhere. You could see these jumping things were mice. If you didn't watch where you walked, you were crunching them underfoot. In fact, that was one of my duties that I didn't particularly appreciate, that the owner said that if you see a nest of them, at your feet, stomp it. But they were at night in the lights of the tractor. We were night farming. You'd see them jumping up in front of the tractor in the lights and stuff. It's just huge number of mice, kind of like, plagues of Egypt during the Exodus with Moses. So I guess we're going to see that kind of stuff here, too, but.
Well, if it counts, I came kind of face to face with a raccoon the other night.
Yeah, and what happened?
I don't know. I was too busy running. No, I'm kidding. I was out with my dog, and we both saw it. And they make some weird noises when they get surprised. The raccoons, they go. So it ran.
But, well. We had them get into our attic down at the farm down there at Miner's Rest, and Holly and I would hear these strange sounds. We had two raccoons in our roof there inside the house, and the sounds and screams they were making were not fear. They were being amorous toward each other, and this went on Oh, yes. It was kind of eerie. But anyway, I guess they enjoyed themselves. And actually, yes, we had raccoons over on the other side of my house in Perth. And we were up in the mountainside there a bit. And it kept sneaking up and getting the tray of food that we put out for the birds. You notice in the morning they were gone and there'd be a little bit of a raccoon dropping or something. So one night I decided to get a picture of him and sat a chair right there next to the window between me and that plate of seed that we put out for the birds. And sure enough, I saw him coming down out of the tree, you know, creeping along to get the goodies. And there he was with his hands in the goodies, and I flashed the camera, bang, like that. And as I said, there was a pane of glass between us, which was good because he kind of did a rapid exodus, back up into the trees. But I still got the photo somewhere. It was cool. Anyway, enough on pests.
All right.
You don't want one of them climbing up your pants leg. Let me tell you that.
No. That's no. Even if they're, especially if they're amorous. No, thank you.
Okay. No, that's a bad thought. Yeah. Dear.
You started it, so all right.
I did. The top six pictures up there from about 52 to 56 are conditions of what's happening around the planet to lead us into war, primarily in the Middle East. But what I want to talk about, which is pertinent on the 4th of July period that we're in, slide 53, there's a 100-year-old World War II veteran. And he was giving an interview about what he thought about America now and the world now. He said, "I'm so upset that the things we did, the things we fought for, and the boys that died for it, it's all gone down the drain."
Yep.
In fact, if you click on the picture, it'll take you to when he was crying in the interview. He just broke down because he said, "I just can't believe this is the America that we fought and died for. Our country's gone to hell." And, you know, for a guy that's been there, done that, and fought the enemies of the United States, that's a powerful statement. And Holly and I both had dads that were, in the military. Mine was Army Air Force and hers was Army. And, we've often remarked that we're glad that they're not here to see what has happened to the country for what they sacrificed for. It's just seeing this guy, brought it home to me again that's, it's sad to see it.
Yeah. And just briefly, when I did attend the closing moments of my time in DC, attended a funeral at Arlington. And, when I walked across the way there and saw all, tens of thousands of headstones, and I'm thinking, why not just why, but where we're at today, what would they think? I mean, spanning how many wars people buried there. It's just incredible. I know that's not the topic, but that was a heck of an interview. I saw that a couple of times, and wow.
Yeah, I know. It's looking at all the flags next to the gravestones there, military graveyards. Yeah,
that's true. So we have about 6.5 minutes left. It's up to you, brother.
Yeah, we were watching, Holly and I, the Fox Nation, mm-hmm, about the what made America great, what we did from the start and along the way. And when you look at the various things, duel fought, the Hamilton Burr duel and what effect that had on, it's history like I'd never seen before in the classroom. And it showed, the brilliance of Andrew Jackson in the New Orleans encounter with the British and how he just clobbered them with trickery and stuff. And you think, wow. And that's, obviously back before World War One and World War Two and stuff like that. And we fought battles all the way along to make America what it is today. And now then, the left are just throwing it away, stamping on it. I can't understand that. I can't.
Well, anyway. Yeah, and I think it's, like you said earlier, I think that everything we're seeing today, and I believe everything is interrelated, interconnected, I think we're seeing the final throes, whether it's our republic or the end game as foretold and prophesied by the Bible. So,
oh yeah, yeah. Hey, I know you and I both, what, 20 years ago and stuff, we were talking about these biblical prophecies and things, but you know, it was in the near future out there somewhere, and it wasn't kind of real in our everyday life yet, but now here we are. Yeah. And it's just, it's every day, every moment, things are happening that tell you we're at the, as Jesus said, at the birth, you know, of this 7-year tribulation and the judgment of the planet, you know, like a woman in labor, everything gets like the Braxton Hicks contractions get more and more frequent, and then they become one great contraction, and the baby is born. In this case, the end of this age is there in the tribulation period. It's
fast. True. And folks, if you want to hear more of talk like this, because I know I do, join Stan's Patreon and make sure you join his talks, because it's just like this, and it's very, very compelling. So make sure you become a Patreon member, standale.com. Okay, go ahead, Stan.
Thank you for that. Yeah. In slide 51, this was about some stone drawings, or drawings on stone, in a rock shelter in Tanzania. And I remember Tanzania is where I think the Garden of Eden was and is today, in the Ngorongoro crater, and the whole plateau there as well. And it says, eerie figures with giant heads found painted in a rock shelter in Tanzania. And if you look at it down in the article, you'll see pictures of these heads. They're bulbous heads, bigger than the body. And it's like what the Hopi call the ant people, which are very thin neck and arms and body and stuff, with a big head. And this just, it reminded me of what the natives had told me there, you know, that God had come down to the Ngorongoro there in Tanzania and had made man from the dirt, and then went back up into the heavens to let man live and, you know, hunt and whatever and multiply. And here you see drawings of several types of these critters, you know, and since it's so close to what the Hopi legends talk about and what's on the stone there in Arizona, you know, these people were all over the planet. I think they were either fallen ones or they were, you know, God's angels doing work for him. But they had a record of this, and they by drawing on these stones, made it permanent. I just think that, you know, Garden of Eden had to be there. There's just no question about it. There's just so much proof coming in from other things. Anyway.
Wow. And folks, make sure you check out his Stan Dale's Garden of Eden the DVD video as well. I mean, my goodness, what a compelling case for that location, and for really for everything that's biblically sound. All right, we got about a minute and a half left there, sir.
All right, well, top slides there, 55 through 56. The war is kind of coming closer in the Middle East and here. A Chinese food company purchased 300 acres of agricultural land in North Dakota, and it's raised the eyebrows of the National Security Agency, because they bought these 300 acres about 20 minutes away from Grand Forks Air Force Base, which houses some of the nation's most sensitive drone technology. According to the North Dakota lawmaker who wrote this, the base manages the backbone of all U.S. military communications across the planet. So the Chinese have been known for doing this, to buy land nearby to key bases or structures, mainly to bases, so they can intercept, I don't know, transmissions or be able to attack it or whatever. I'm not sure.
Not good either way. And we should have, in my view anyway, we should disallow that kind of international acquisition of land. But that's just me.
I think Australia had to address this problem. In the end, they didn't solve it, but Japan and China were buying property from civilians there, you know, large estates.
Yep.
Anyway, yeah.
Stan Dale, standale.com. Make sure you bookmark his website, become a Patreon member, and take advantage of all his intellectual materials. Stan, thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Doug.
All right.
See you
All right. Folks, that'll do it for me. And, hey, Tune in tomorrow for a very special report on what happened in Highland Park and more. God bless you, and God bless America. Have a good night.